Hey everybody, you are listening to Coffin Talk. This is Mike Oppenheim, and this is the show where we interview people about their thoughts on how their views on death affect the way they live their life. This week, coming to us from the East Coast is Emerson Souza. He is an organizational psychologist by trade, working as a government consultant in the field of human capital, human-centered design, and tech integration and development. He's an overtly curious person with a profound interest in people. For example, he went to 5 colleges intentionally to diversify the type of people he could meet, and he now runs a successful podcast, Here's Some Evil, which I was on it, and it was awesome, and he interviews some of the interesting, the weird, the knowledgeable, and the controversial. So I already know Emerson. He's effing awesome. I cannot wait for you guys to meet him. So without any further delays, how's it going?
Hey, Mike, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I just am really happy to be talking to you again. And we talked about how fun our first initial podcast was. And yeah, man, this is exciting. Thanks again for having me.
Awesome. I feel the same way. My wife can always tell when I have like a good, fun time on a podcast. She's like, oh, did you make another friend? And I'm like, yeah. And I get all sad because I'm like, if we lived like near each other, I would actually hang out with you. And so.
Yeah, right. That no, is of course.
The weird thing about these 2020s. I already know a little bit about your background, but like I said, I'm just going to ask it for our guest knowledge. So can you tell us real quick how old you are, where you grew up, and what generation, if any, you consider yourself a member of?
Sure. So I'm 35. I'll be 36 in April. I grew up in the same area that I'm living now. So it's in the Northern Virginia area. So I grew up in a city called Arlington. I eventually went to live in Alexandria, which is where I live now. Went to high school here. And I feel very, very connected to being a millennial just because my generation was, I feel like it's like the 90s movies, the game consoles, all of the things that like the 90s kids like claim, you know, with Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon, like I feel very connected to that. So I feel pretty hard, like a hardcore millennial, really.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then I have to ask just because I understand what the word organizational means and I understand what the word psychologist means, but what on earth are those two things when combined?
You know, it's funny. I think one of my biggest regrets of ever studying this is just having to explain it. Like it's not, because like it's like obviously it's two so like super common words, right? Organization and psychology, but basically it's literally you're combining the two, like two practices as far as like what people would do as far as like an MBA kind of thing. Like it's very focused on an organization, right? All the elements of an organization. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to figure out better ways to better it and make it more productive and sustainable. And then we're using the psychology of it. So instead of like looking at, you know, people who do like accounting or marketing or some sort of business ethics or something like that, they're looking at things that are kind of removed from the people. Whereas like my job is to look only at the people and then eventually kind of figure out how that ties into the job itself. And I'm saying job is like all encompassing, right? So it's like the things that they do day to day and how to kind of extrapolate that into you know, work streams and day-to-day operations and things like that. So basically I study people like in an organization. I say, oh, okay, like this is the demographic that's going to be doing this. And this is like the general corporate culture and this is how it ties into the people. And so I basically like take all of this like qualitative information and then I later quantify it and I tell a story behind it. And I say, hey, you know, based on our studies, it seems like this is happening because of this. And then we can say our recommendations are based on these findings because we eventually quantified them. And so people pay us to say, hey, thanks for the data. And now we'll either, you know, implement the recommendations or we need either like to find a better way to do X. And you know, we kind of go from there. So it's like a very like iterative process. And now because I work with technology. So before it was like just the human capital work, which is like trying to figure out like how to build like better leadership programs or you know, standardize a way to help people like deal with change management, things like that. Now it's like, oh, we're introducing a new piece of technology and, you know, we're trying to figure out what's the best way that we can integrate this technology without causing any hiccups, without, you know, putting too much pause or spending too much money on training and things like that. So now it's like kind of applying that same like psychological aspect to it in the tech integration part of it.
Wow, that was really cool. That was a great answer. And I do understand all of the things you said, and that actually seems like a very timely and good occupation to find and that needed to be invented. And it's weird because I'm like a humanist first, but so is your job description. So it's like interesting that it's a analytical approach to emerging technology, but like humans first. And that's kind of, I think, everyone's, whether open or secretive, kind of fear about this new era that's dawning on us is like, wait,
yeah,
like to what extent am I being replaced versus like I'm getting a new aide or helper, you know? And my personal take is working because you have to is never fun. Working because you enjoy it is always fun. So bring on AI, let them help as much as they want, take away jobs that people don't want to do. But I want to cross into like the central purpose of this podcast, which is to talk about, you know, more metaphysical philosophy and stuff. Psychiatry and psychology, by nature, many people think that they're not religious and that, as a matter of fact, you have to be like atheistic to do them. I don't believe that or anything, but I am curious, were you once upon a time religious? Are you still religious? And does that ever conflict with the psychology side of your mind?
I'll do a quick response and then I'll do a more long-winded response, but okay. I'm not religious. I haven't been religious in a long time. So it doesn't conflict with any of the work that I do or I'm interested in. But I do come from a very, very religious background. Especially my mom, my dad's side of the family is religious, but they're not like super hardcore. They come from the Catholic side, and like my grandmother, you know, is a little hardcore, but everyone else kind of is just kind of religious in parallel. But my mom's side of the family is extremely religious. They're Christian Baptists. You know, they go to the church Sundays and Wednesdays, and they would go more often if they could. And so I grew up in a very religious household, but I was an extremely inquisitive kid. I started questioning religion at a very, very young age. And so I kind of removed myself from it at a young age, because when I would ask these questions, instead of being met with like, hey, you know, this is, you know, the answer to your question, I was getting reprimanded for asking questions.
Oh wow.
And so it got a little bit harder to follow in the footsteps of my mom's side of the family, just because, you know, just I feel like I was answering very simple questions as a kid, but for whatever reason, instead of being met with like, oh hey, like, you know, this is why we believe something, this is why other people believe something, this is our reasoning, you know, it was just like, why would you ever ask that, why would you ever question our faith, and blah 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 blah. So I was already, like I said, I was already kind of on the outs. And then when that started happening at a young age, I was just like, you know what, this isn't for me. And the moment I was given the choice to not attend church, I stopped like altogether when I was like around like 15, 16. And then I kind of started reading on other religions. Religion in particular just never, you know, for lack of a better way to say it, just like rubbed me the right way. It just, I never found this like profound interest in like anything spiritual or godlike or, you know, like anything like that. I never felt like, you know, there was a heaven and a hell. I never felt like there was like some overlord looking over me. Like I never felt the need to pray. I don't know. I kind of just intuitively felt that I didn't believe in this thing. And so I just continued on that path.
That's cool. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And it's sad to me, not your parents specifically, but just any parents who take that approach, because, you know, the gift they're trying to give you is something they obviously value and love.
Right.
But they're not letting you explore it. And, you know, I have young children. We talked about this before we started recording. And it's like definitely my biggest fear is to turn them off or on to religion, because I don't want to like, you know, be responsible for something like that. But with that said, what are your metaphysical theories on life and existence? What do you specifically think is going to happen to you when you die?
Hey everyone, if you're a fan of the show, please head over to MikeyOp.com and click the subscribe button. It's the best way to support us and it's free. That's MikeyOp.com. Thanks.
Yeah. So it's funny because I don't necessarily feel connected to anything that's spiritual. But one of the I actually having this conversation with somebody pretty recently about that. And it's one of those things where the ultimate answer is just like simply like, I don't know, but obviously like I have thought about this a little bit deeper, like in a weird way, like I still kind of, I believe in the soul and I believe in, you know, just, we're not just like bags of meat and blood. Like, I don't know. It's just, there's like something where, and the reason that I was having this conversation is because we were talking about ghosts, right? So something, you know, because if you believe in ghosts, that means you do believe in some sort of afterlife. Like that's just kind of like to an extent, right? Like some of those kind of like they work in tandem to in a way. But and the reason we were talking about it is like, you know, like what could that be? And so and I heard this one theory about how like that ghosts could be like memories of people that are still living in other living things. So like if you have wooden furniture like that it was once living, that it's like their memories imprinted there. I don't know, it's a wild theory, but I did enjoy the theory. That's admittedly cool. Yeah. I feel like I don't know, there's as far as belief goes, I it just kind of feels like once you go, like you're whatever that thing you would call your soul, like it could exist beyond, but I just don't believe in like a heaven and hell. Like, I don't think it's like, I don't think you have to like, you know, obviously there's like certain, like, I think everybody should stick to a very, like, to some moral ethics here, but it just like, as far as like where you would go after, I don't know. I find it very, very hard to believe that it's like, there's like a very distinct location. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, maybe there is like, you know, somewhere, or maybe everyone just kind of lives on Earth in like you kind of mentioned, like a metaphysical world, or they're able to traverse the universe and explore other things. And who knows, it's, but yeah, that's like really the extent of my belief. It's just like, if you go, then maybe whatever you would call like a soul kind of like goes into another realm, and then you get to explore like a different part of the universe. But I don't know. I think that's really like the extent of my belief, if any of that makes sense.
No, it made a lot of sense. And, I mean, really the only follow-up question that I'm dying to ask you is, have you ever had a moment in your life where you feared for your own death, or have you had a close call or anything like that?
Yeah, honestly, I think like too many, really.
Wow.
I was just like such a daredevil, like growing up. And, I've never done anything like super extreme, like skydiving, which I've always died, wanting to do, which is funny to say, I've been dying to do it. But I've snowboarded my entire life. I've done, you know, just going off of jumps and really bad wreckage where I've ended up in the hospital.
Wow.
And, I did drag racing for like, wow, 4 or 5 years. Yeah. I just doing some really like fun, but also very stupid things.
No, and I got into really, cool. Yeah.
I got into a really bad car accident when I was younger, and, I was in the hospital for several days. I got a really bad alcohol poisoning when I was younger too. And it was,
wow,
in a coma for like 6 hours. Yeah. That was probably like actually the closest I've probably been to death is when I got really bad alcohol poisoning, was in a coma.
Wow. Hold on. Slow down. How old were you?
I was 16.
Man. And this was, I'm assuming, like illegal underage drinking at a party or something?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Can you tell the story, or is it not?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'd be happy to. It's actually part of the story is really, really funny, but yeah, my friends, it was the first time that I learned what a screwdriver was. And when you're a kid, you're like, orange juice. Like, yeah. So you're like, okay. And then I was just drinking orange juice and vodka basically for like 8 hours. And then like, I just got incredibly drunk. And then, my mom found, like, she, you know, she was calling my phone. She couldn't find me. So she, her and her sister, my aunt, went out looking for me. They found me kind of just like laying on the side of the road. They picked me up, put me in the car. And then, and this is at the same time where like my cousins and I, we would all sleep over at my grandparents' house like every summer for like 2 weeks. So I have 20 cousins. We are 22 grandchildren. So like my mom pulls up to my grandparents' house, and there's, you know, basically 20 other cousins. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning waiting for me. And they like sit me down in the chair, and then, you know, she's trying to ask me a bunch of questions instead of just immediately taking me to the hospital because she just thinks I'm just drunk. She's like, you know, where were you? Where'd you get the alcohol from? Like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, But I'm like in a different dimension of
that's what I was gonna ask, because you said you went into a coma. So yeah.
Oh yeah. So like, but I'm like basically like I'm completely incoherent. I'm just kind of mumbling words, and then I'm like, and then I just start violently vomiting, and then my grandmother grabs a Bible. She starts like it's like looks like she's performing an exorcism. Yeah, it's wild. And then then they notice that I'm like throwing up blood, and So then they take me to the hospital, and they didn't pump my stomach right away. They basically, I think I was just like on the verge of dying. So they had to basically just like save me from dying. And then I went into like a vegetative state for like a day or something like that. But, and then they pumped my stomach, and yeah, it was awful.
That was the most, like, I just can tell you, you're over this story in a good way. Cause wow, man, that's just a lot of drama in that.
Yeah. Like, it was, I mean, I honestly, it's not like I'm over the story. I part of me like loves telling the story. because I will say one of my, like, when I got out of it, mm-hmm. my entire family is in my hotel room with like candles. And I was like,
God.
So I woke up thinking I was dead. Like, I was like, oh, I died. Like, I thought this was like my wake or something. That's how like, it was really, really weird. I was like, holy shit. It was almost like I accepted. I was like, oh my God, like I died. Like, holy shit. Like, this is, everyone is here because it's my funeral or something like that. Or it was really, really, really bizarre. But yeah. And then everyone is always asking like, what were you like? I don't remember dreaming. I don't remember anything that was when I was like in a coma. Like, yeah. I don't remember anything at all. But part of me, like, the only thing I remember is feeling like I could hear conversations like outside of, but I don't like, no dream. I didn't feel like I was dreaming at all. Mm-hmm. Like, it was almost like I was just like, I was kind of awake, but I could hear like certain conversations, but I don't know. It's, people were asking me, oh, what did you hear? I'm like, I couldn't even tell you, but I felt like I could hear people talking. That was it.
That is crazy. And that's such a cool intersection into like near death experience research and just all sorts of self-reported and like EKG readings when people are in comas and stuff. I'm fascinated by the subject. So I'm really glad I asked about that. And I'm really glad you're okay. Quick follow up, because I do have a couple other questions I'm dying to ask you.
Sure.
Do you still drink? Did that in any way affect like your ability to use drugs and alcohol?
No, it should have.
Thank you. That's all I want to know. No, go ahead.
Yeah, it should have. But like, I mean, I definitely like took a break. You know, like I was like, oh, like, because this was also like in Brazil, and I like got back to high school. The following year, and I told the story, and it allowed me to control my drinking for sure. Like, mm-hmm. When I partied after that, I was like, oh, I'm definitely like not. You know, I was actually pretty. I didn't do mixers for a while. Like, I was like, I'm just going to drink beer. I would say like, cause that happened just before my junior year. And I would say my junior year was very much like tame, in the sense that like, I was like, you know what, let's not let that happen again. So I guess it affected me in a way, but I was like, just learn from it. Just don't do it again.
Wow, man. That is like just so damn interesting, on so many levels. And I was hoping you'd bring up the Brazil thing, just because I think it's cool that you're like a multicultural individual. And yeah, no, wow, dude, that's I'm really glad that story came up and you told it. I do want you to talk a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah,
first of all, I love the title, Hear Some Evil. I think it's incredibly clever. And secondly, but not to be discounted, the way you tag it as like the interesting, the weird, the knowledgeable, and the controversial. So my specific question to you is, tell me about how you started it briefly, and then get into the part about controversial and the like, Hear Some Evil, like get into that side of it if you can.
Sure. So to bring it back around to my family, my grandmother, when she was alive, for years, we would always get into these little arguments about just everything worldly. And I was always like a very like tame debater. Like I hate when people like argue about anything in life especially when it's like not things that are directly in their lives, you know, especially like politics or you know, any type of issues or, you know, current events that are going on in the world. Like when people are so like adamant about something, I'm like, you know, let's take a step back and let's talk about this a little bit more calmly. And so I would always go to my grandma. Well, not always, but like, you know, we would get into these arguments about just very, very simple things. And so as soon as I start presenting kind of my arguments and my case and, you know, and my opinions, and she was just like, I don't want to listen to that. That's evil. Like, I don't want to listen to that evil. Like everything that was presented. Yeah.
That's cool.
So everything that was like presented to her that like wasn't like in her favor or to her liking, she would just like deem it as evil. And so I remember like as a kid, you know, and this happened very, very early on. And to give you like even more specific example, like, so I have tattoos, I'm covered in tattoos. I've always loved getting tattoos. Like it's a big part of my life. And when I started getting tattoos, my grandmother didn't talk to me for 2 years,
Whoa.
Two straight years. Yeah. Yeah. So, and, you know, I, at the time I was like, you know, I think I was like on the, about to graduate college and go into grad school. And so here I am, I'm in Brazil and I'm like trying to have a conversation with my grandma. Like I'm educated. I'm about to be, you know, about to go to grad school. Like I'm going to continue my education. Like I have a good job. I'm not out there committing crimes. I'm not, there's all these things that I'm not, mm-hmm. that would make me like a much worse person. There's all these things that I am that like is in direct opposition of someone who's a bad person. So but for whatever reason, you know, something as like getting tattoos was just so bad and so evil to her that she just couldn't, you know, couldn't understand or couldn't just take in the fact that this is happening. So for 2 years, and I would just, you know, be like, hey, you know, listen, just listen to my evil and let me give you at least an explanation as to why I like doing this. You know, it's not, I don't get tattoos because I'm in a gang. I don't yeah. get tattoos because I support Satan or anything like that. You know, it's. At the time it was, you know, listen to my evil. Like that was always kind of what I was saying to my grandma was mm-hmm. listen to my evil. Like, and then maybe we can find common ground. And then I fast forward to like 2018 or something like that. This is where it gets funny and weird, but I move into a new apartment and I'm kind of just like scouring, Amazon to find some cool decor for my apartment. And I love skulls. I've always like loved like decorating something with skulls. Like I have like a really cool skull speaker and you know, I had this like fun like Tim Burton art that like from like Nightmare Before Christmas. And
cool.
And I've just always been into skulls. So I'm like, oh, like skull or skeleton decor for my apartment. I'm just looking at it. And I came across a kitchen mat and I still have it till this day. And it's like the, you know, those three monkeys that are just like
that are
speak no evil, see no evil, hear no evil, but it was three skeletons in the same sitting position, but the middle one right underneath he had headphones on, he was doing like the rock symbol, and underneath it said hear some evil.
That's cool.
And I was like, oh my god, like this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen, and I like completely fell in love with it. It just like really, really spoke to me, to the point where I ended up getting a tattoo. That said, that is actually my podcast logo now. So so I have my podcast logo is, well, I got tattooed on me before I even decided to start a podcast. So I got that tattooed on me, and then eventually I started traveling, and to come back to the controversial part, I lived in 9 cities in 2.5 years. I lived in Tennessee and in South Carolina. In North Carolina, in Georgia, in Louisiana, and then I went to the West Coast, LA, San Francisco, Oregon, and I just like lived two different worlds. Lived in Florida as well. That's a whole different effing world. But, but I don't know. I met so many different people, and I feel like the weird kind of political climate that we're in, for whatever reason, people feel very comfortable in their echo chambers, and I was just trying to kind of like introduce a little bit, like, you know, oppositional nuance, and just say, hey, like, have you thought? It's very similar to the way that I would do with my grandma. Just like, have you thought about it like in this way without like getting angry? You know, like, have you at least considered it? And so you know, the precipice of the podcast is really just storytelling, but But to go into even deeper is like, if you hear something that you don't like on the podcast, like don't immediately discount it. Don't immediately dismiss it. Like just listen to it. Just listen and see, like, allow yourself to react. If you're going to get angry initially, like, go through the motions of anger, but like, don't immediately shut down the podcast. Like start, imagine if you were listening to something and you didn't like it. Like, well, how would you, but you're imagine being in a conversation with this person. Like, how would you debate them about this? But so that was kind of like the idea is that, you know, and like I said, it's not, I would say 10%, maybe 20% of the people that I interview could be controversial, but it's like, I interviewed, you know, you and some, a Pilates instructor, but there's also some guy who's, I interviewed a cop who's got his own opinions. I interviewed, a presidential candidate, like, you know, and he's got his certain views and I may not agree with it, but it's one of those things that just kind of wanted to just encompass all types of people. It ties back into just like my love for like people and psychology.
That's awesome. And I think that was a great way to explain it. And I love the story behind it. I'm fascinated by all of it. And I thought you had lived in Florida because I was going to make a joke at the beginning and I'm glad I waited. But but yeah, that's pretty funny. And I do want to say, because I do follow your podcast, like I love your titles. I think they're very clever. And I really do encourage everyone to check you out online. And I thought that answer also just kind of applies to this awkward, horrible, annoying year for everyone in America, unless you're insane, because we're going to pretend to elect another president. And no, I'm not talking about stealing or not stealing an election. I'm saying that pretend like we actually care and take it responsibly. So,
right.
Yeah. The it's weird. Like, I have thoughts that I never thought were controversial, and I now think they're controversial because of like the feedback loop of the non-echo chamber. And it's just so insane to me. So I don't know if you feel the same way, but,
I 100%, I feel like my origin story when it comes to like my opinions and anything really is like, it's from like a space of like, just not knowing. Like I was like, I never really cared a lot, you know, but obviously like the older you get, you kind of have to pay attention to an extent. I mean, you're a member of society, you have to vote and everything. You don't have to vote, but you know, it occurs that you vote and blah blah blah. But I'm like, but you know, there's it, like, for example, when I was living in California, I like found myself being in these conversations and sometimes these arguments or these debate with people about topics that I've never really considered. So I'm like, I'm in real time kind of going over the motions of like understanding the issue, like in the middle of the conversation. And I'm almost like getting reprimanded because I don't have a definitive opinion about it. You know, it's like, and I'm like, I like, I'm still like, you're watching me go through the motions of like understanding what the issue is. So I'm still like, like, okay, so this is what you're saying. And okay, I was like, but like, I could see why, you know, somebody might, they're like, what do you mean you could see why? No. Like you should be. And I was like, whoa, everyone relax. Like so that's kind of like where, you know, a lot of this kind of came from. It's just like, guys, I'm still trying to understand all of this, just like everybody else. Like no one, like unless this is like you're, you know, if you work for a nonprofit that specifically does this, like then yeah, great. You should have like a very strong opinion. But I don't know, like I think it's also okay to just work through the madness.
Yeah, well, that is the best note ever to end our podcast on, and I knew this would be an awesome one. I am thrilled that we got to talk again. You're definitely very high up in my level of respect, so I hope that's clear.
Yeah, same here, man. I really do hope that you and I stay in contact, because I mentioned this, I think, at the end of our podcast, either on record or off record, but you by far are one of my favorite people that I've interviewed. You and I had like a conversation. It was great. Honestly, I felt like you and I could have done like a 5-hour, if time allowed, we would have done probably the longest podcast ever. But
I totally agree. I really do. And it sucks because I know that the richest podcaster in the world does 3-hour podcasts, but for the rest of us, I don't think it ever flies. So it's a weird paradigm that we live in. Well, thank you again, Emerson. I will keep in touch and I will definitely continue to follow your pod. My name is Mike Oppenheim. You have been listening to Coffin Talk, and we will see you soon.